This is Cindy Fowler from the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Dave's Garden website, the Gardening for the Blind website, Tips for the Lazy Gardener by Linda Tilgner, and Reader's Digest's 1001 Hints and Tips for Your Garden. So we'll start with Gardening for the Blind, Tips for People with Impaired Vision by Larry Kaplan. Gardening is one of the most popular leisure activities of Americans. Many people think that vision impairment will prevent them from enjoying their gardens. Not so. The French painter Claude Monet was an avid gardener who loved flowers almost as much as he did painting. Although Monet eventually lost most of his vision, he did not stop painting, nor did he ever lose his love for gardening. Vision impairment does not have to spoil your enjoyment of gardening either. In fact, with some planning, care, and a readiness to ask for help when you need it, you can have a garden that has a lot more going for it than just eye appeal. You can have a garden that appeals to all of your senses. A word of caution. The suggestions here are helpful hints and should not be used as a license to perform dangerous tasks. Be careful not to attempt a project that you feel may place you in a potentially harmful situation. Ask for assistance with the project. If you feel at risk, above all, do not use any chemical compound without first reading the label directions or having someone read them to you. Tips on planning your garden, getting around in the garden. Getting around in the garden should be your first consideration. Most gardens have a lawn, which is attractive and also cushions accidental falls. However, canes and crutch tips can easily get tangled in the grass. Grass can also hide uneven ground, which can throw you off balance. So it's a good idea to use some sort of paving for navigating in the garden or landscape. Paths and paved areas should be smooth, level, and firm. They should also have good traction. Wood, for example, becomes very slippery when wet. Provide direct roots through the garden and make sure paths have clear beginnings and ends. Include wind chimes, fountains, or other objects you can hear so you can orient yourself in the garden more easily. Path edges should have distinct differences in texture, such as concrete to grass or bricks to a mulched bed, so you can detect the edges. Use a strip with a change in texture across the path to indicate an entrance to the patio, a tree with interesting bark, or a clump of particularly fragrant plants. The strip should be about 12 to 18 inches wide and can be made from any noticeably contrasting paving materials, such as a brick strip across a crushed stone path. Avoid raised edging, which can create a tripping hazard. Working in the garden. Making the easy work to work in is the next consideration. Raised beds and containers make it easy to reach the soil and the plants. Raised beds are stable and heavy enough for you to sit on the edge or lean on for support, while containers can be moved and take up less room. These structures also cut down the number of special tools you'll need to tend your garden. Avoid structures with sharp corners and edges. The right tools are also important. You'll need to select tools that are durable, lightweight, and easy for you to use. Some tools, like garden trowels, will have engraved markings to indicate soil depth, making it easier to determine how deep to plant bulbs and other transplants. Most garden jobs are easier and less strenuous when you can use both hands. This may be difficult if you need a cane to move around. To make your tools easy to carry, you may want to wear a garden apron or tool belt with lots of pockets so that you can keep your hands free. A four-wheeled wagon can carry several larger tools and can be pulled with one hand. And now from Dave's Garden website, Goat's Beard by Sharon Brown. It was never in my plans to get into trouble. Somehow, it just happened, much like the cartoon character of years ago who walked around with a dark cloud over his head. Goat's beard is the common name for several plants, but I am talking about the goat's beard that slightly resembles a dandelion. Tragopogon protensis grows in fields, along roadsides, ditches, and on rocky banks. Actually, it grows most anywhere and with great abundance. Some consider it invasive because of its long tap root. Chop it down and it comes right back. Dig it up and usually the seeds have already spread. It can be quite attractive, though not when it is in bloom, but afterward, when the seed head forms. It grew wherever it wanted to grow in the mountains, and one year I was really into drying flowers to use for decorating. At the same time, Aunt Bet was looking for plants that were edible, and we were on our way to find goat's beard. It was the fall of the year with just a bit of nip in the air. I had on overalls that had lots of pockets, a long-sleeved red gingham shirt, and I remember having new red tennis shoes. Around my hair, I wore a red bandana tied under my chin like a kerchief. I was too young to place any importance on fashion, but I have always been aware of color, and usually I dressed in things that matched, as long as they were red or blue. We started walking along the edge of a field, and since Aunt Bet was not climbing the mountain, I thought she might be in a conversational mood, so I asked her about the plant we were on our way to dig. "Aunt Bet, what kind of plant would be called a goat's beard? I never saw a goat, but wonder why a plant would be named after a goat. You reckon it's something the goats like to eat? There's a song called Bill Bailey's Goat Was Feeling Fine. Ate three red shirts right off the line. You know that song, Aunt Bet? It's a funny song. Is it really true that goats eat red shirts? You reckon I should go back and change to a different color?" All that was said in maybe 2 seconds, without a breath in between. Aunt Bet said, "Child, you talk so fast I can't remember what it was you was asking, and even if I did, it ain't got nothing to do with goats. We're just going to get some of them roots to cook for supper. Goats, goodness mercy, what'll you think of next? See them fuzzballs over yonder? That's them. We're going to dig them up. We're going to eat fuzzballs for supper, Aunt Bet? I'm eating no fuzzballs, and that's that." The white seeds give goat's beard its name, and it is a really pretty large ball of feathery white seeds. The plant blooms only in the morning with a bright yellow flower, but the flower is not nearly as attractive as the seed head. There are several species of this plant, and they all have similar qualities, so most people lump them together and call them all by the name goat's beard. All species have edible, nutritious tap roots that many people claim taste like parsnips. There was also a name for the product when it was cooked, and that's what Aunt Bet called it when it appeared on the supper table. Salsify. Salsify is made by boiling or roasting the tap roots as a vegetable, or the stalks are cooked like asparagus, and the crowns or leaf bases like artichokes and are gently simmered. They also use the tender leaves that appear in springs in salads, or cook them as a green vegetable, much like any kind of greens. No matter which part she used, Aunt Bet always added a little bacon grease and cooked it till it was very tender. With cornbread, it was pretty tasty stuff. I was not too fond of the cooked roots. They tasted too much like dirt to me. Well, yes, I have tasted dirt a few times, so I do know what I'm talking about. So we got to the patch of goat's beard, and she was digging deep for the long, fleshy taproot, and I was helping her by putting them in the burlap bag she carried. I asked her if she was going to use the seed balls. I was thinking of using them as dried decorations and told her. She told me that was fine, and I could gather some before we left, but she said she had nothing to carry them in. That's okay, Aunt Bet. I got lots of pockets in my overalls, so I can put them all in my pockets. And so I did. I stuffed the pockets on each side. I stuffed the hip pockets, and I stuffed the bib pocket with goat's beard seed balls, most of which were about 3 inches across and full of fuzzy seeds. I was a happy kid. There was a time when goat's beard was used as a medicinal plant. Aunt Bet mentioned that the plant was used as a diuretic and for treating kidney stones and heartburn. There is nothing toxic about the plant, but there is no scientific evidence that it has any medicinal benefit. As far as Aunt Bet was concerned, it was only another food provided by the mountains. I must have had supper with her that night, and when I got home, I played around with one thing or another until bedtime. Then I went to take a bath. I dropped my clothes into the clothes hamper and thought nothing more of the seed balls in my pockets. The next wash day came, and when I got home from school, my mother was waiting for me. She stood 10 feet tall, and with her hands on her hips, she said, "I have a small chore for you, and you will take care of it right now." She led me to the basement where the wringer washer was kept. It stood on 4 legs. The wringer was on top, and a large black rubber hose ran out of the bottom to the drain pipe in the concrete floor. There was also a smaller black hose that attached to a faucet on the wall and ran over to the top of the washer. One let the water in, the other let the water out. I was not tall enough to see into the washer, so Mother told me to pull the step stool over and look at what I had done. Inside the washer were the remains of as many seed balls as I had in my pockets. They weren't so pretty now, just wet, covering the entire bottom of the washer and clogging the outgoing hose. "You will clean out the washer," she said, "and you will pick up all this mess off every piece of clothing that I washed with your overalls today. And you will never put another thing into the clothes hamper until you have gone through the pockets." "Well, Mama, it could have been a frog or a snake, so you really ought to be glad it was just them seed balls." "I think you are the one who should be glad it was only seed balls," said my mother, the teacher. I spent a few hours hanging head first into the open washer, behind up in the air, feet dangling down the side of it. While I worked, I sang over and over again. "Bill Bailey's goat was feeling fine, ate 3 red shirts right off the line." And now, easy plants for new gardeners, Comfrina globosa, Globe Amaranth, by Melody Rose. Many new gardeners often choose plants that are beyond their skills. When starting something new, it's always a good idea to match your skills to the project, and gardening is no different. Many new gardeners become frustrated when they choose plants that require more ability than they have at the moment. The problem is learning how to match the plants with your skill level. Gomphrena globosi is an easy plant that thrives in poor soil and hot conditions. It even withstands a bit of drought since once it is established, so it can survive careless watering habits. The colorful papery bracts shine like little beacons in the garden and last a long time, so there's quite a bit of bang for the buck. New gardeners should consider this plant because it is tough, and experienced gardeners should add it to their borders and cutting gardens. It even works well in containers. I've added it to some of my containers this year, and it has done well paired with lantana and pineapple sage. Globe amaranth is the common name for this annual, native to Panama and Guatemala. As a member of the vast amaranthus tribe, It shares a number of things in common with its cousins. One in particular is the meaning behind the name amaranth. It is derived from the Greek amarantos, which translates as unfading. This is because the papery outer bracts are not the actual flowers, but a shield for the more delicate reproductive areas. We also call these plants everlastings because of this trait as well, and they are often used as decorative additions to potpourri and dried arrangements. As with a number of plants in this family, the young leaves are edible and are often used as pot herbs in their native lands. This is an annual plant that completes its life cycle in one season, so it is a good choice for the impatient. Children like quick gratification, and globe amaranth gives them a great show the same season it's planted, unlike perennial plants that may take two or three seasons to flower. Since it is forgiving of neglect, it is a good choice for children's gardens and where quick color is needed. Butterflies and bees are attracted to the bright blooms too, so add them to your pollinator gardens. If those attributes don't convince you, then add that deer to avoid it. So if Bambi is a nuisance, globe amaranth may be a good choice. While these plants do well in poor soil and hot conditions, they will thrive in richer soil with regular water. Plant seeds in early spring after the last frost, or start indoors under light 6 to 8 weeks before setting them outdoors in a sunny area. For faster germination, soak the seeds overnight in water. These seeds are also easy to save for next year. Just crumble the spent flower heads and the fuzzy white seeds will be obvious. Store in a cool, dry place until spring. Once the plants have several sets of true leaves, pinch them back to encourage branching. This will produce more flowers in the long run. Once the flowers start to bloom, there is no need to deadhead since the colorful bracts remain attractive all summer. Mature plants grow between 1 and 3 feet tall, so they make a good addition to the middle border or as part of a cottage garden. Mulch helps retain even moisture in the soil, and that makes for healthy plants, too. If you must give your globe amaranth supplemental water, do so in the mornings so the leaves have a chance to dry during the day. They are susceptible to powdery mildew if foliage remains damp for long periods. These pretty little plants are attracting the interest of the medical community as well. The leaves contain antioxidants, and research is showing anti-cancer properties too. Globe amaranth has long been a folk medicine for treating diarrhea, diabetes, and high blood pressure in its native regions, and research is promising in those fields, so its usefulness is being recognized in mainstream medicine now. It is refreshing to see that medicine is looking to the natural world for treatments and cures, as opposed to filling us full of more chemicals. There are various shades of pink, purple, white, and red available, and many vendors offer seeds. Many garden centers and nurseries even offer seedlings in the spring, along with petunias and marigolds, so it should be easy to pick up some for next year's garden. These are easy and forgiving plants that new gardeners should take note of. Since they are annuals, they can be a placeholder in the garden until more skills are learned. Experienced gardeners like them because they are low-maintenance plants that give an impressive show while they turn their nurturing efforts to more finicky. They make long-lasting cut flowers, and crafters like them for their durable blossom heads. So, whether you are new to gardening or an old hand, globe amaranth is an excellent choice for everyone. And now from Tips for the Lazy Gardener by Linda Tilgner. An ounce of prevention. Here's where the proverbial ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Once the woodchuck has chomped off your beans at ground level, the raccoon has stripped and devoured every ear of corn, and cucumber beetles have decimated emerging seedlings, you may as well throw up your hands and surrender and hightail it to the nearest farmer's market with wallet in hand. Remember the lazy gardener's motto and build your soil for fertility and tilth. insects and diseases do the most damage on unhealthy plants. Robust plants draw their vigor from soil. Check yours for proper pH and sufficient nutrients. Keep its organic content high. Make sure there's enough water by irrigating and mulching. Control weeds while plants are little and rotate crops. Read the blurbs in seed catalog to find disease-resistant varieties. And choose seeds adapted to your geographic area and grow plants in season. Now from Reader's Digest, 1001 Hints and Tips for Your Gardens, here's information on raspberries. Thwart virus. Check at the nursery to make sure your new raspberry plants have been certified as virus-free. Do not let roots dry out before planting. Plant a few inches deeper than they were in their pots and cut them back to about 6 inches. Cultivate carefully. Injured roots can admit virus. Double your pleasure. Plant ever-bearing raspberries instead of the standard single crop varieties. You'll reap a small crop in June and a larger crop in October. A combo hedge. To get a protective yet productive hedge, mix single crop and double crop raspberries with blackberries. Add a climbing vine like trumpet honeysuckle to lace the vines, the canes together. The plants create a prickly barrier while providing a season-long berry harvest. Too little space? Tie two raspberry bushes around a stake about 5 feet tall. Gather the branches together gently with strips of soft cloth, making sure to leave space between the canes for air circulation. How to prune. To prune June-bearing single crop varieties, cut the second-year canes, which have borne fruit and are turning brown and dry, to the ground. At the same time, cut back any first-year canes that have yet to bear fruit to a height of about 4 feet. These will branch out and produce fruit the following year. To prune ever-bearing raspberries, cut all canes that have borne fruit back to 4 feet. Give them support. To keep long canes from touching the ground or blowing about in the wind, build a support. Drive sturdy posts 2 to 2.5 feet into the ground, then stretch wire between them at knee and chest height. There is usually no need to attach the canes to the wires. Watch for dry spells, which can decrease the crop and size of the berries. Keep your raspberry bushes well irrigated at such times, watering in the evening. Probable pests. Japanese beetles love raspberries. Pick off the pests and crush them. Aphids can be controlled by a heavy spray from a garden hose or an application of insecticidal soap. Spray fruit worms, which eat the buds, with carbaryl, C-A-R-B-A-R-Y-L, or rotenone, R-O-T-E-N-O-N-E. Good housekeeping. Raspberries are also vulnerable to many diseases, especially in warm climates. Pick up any canes that are diseased or winter-killed and burn them. Remove nearby wild bramble bushes to allow air to circulate freely. And a raspberry sampler. Among the best ever-bearing raspberries are Heritage, with extra sweet red berries that grow on self-supporting canes. Ever-bearing Goldie and Fall Gold are unique for their color. Good single-crop raspberries include large-fruited Mammoth Red and the popular Taylor, noted for its excellent flavor. The heirloom Cumberland has firm black fruits. In frigid climates, try the subtly sweet Killarney. Easy fire starters. Don't discard hard, dry raspberry bush canes after you've pruned them off. They will become excellent kindling for your fireplace. And here's some information about aluminum foil. Protect young trees from mice and rabbits. Wrap trunks loosely in sheets of foil to a height of 18 inches. The glittering, rattling surface keeps the gnawers away. Use aluminum foil mulch to speed growth and protect against insects. Stretch it between rows of plants and use rocks or bricks along the edge to anchor. The light the foil reflects can increase yields, especially in cloudy regions, and speed the ripening of tomatoes or the blooming of a rose bush by a full 2 weeks. The foil also keeps thrips and aphids away. A cheap substitute. If you're using large amounts of foil, save money by painting black plastic mulch with the aluminum-colored paint sold at hardware stores. Foil scarecrows. Keep birds away by cutting patterns from cardboard, stars, circles, seashells, and wrapping them in foil. Hang from the branches of ripening berry bushes and fruit trees. The flashing sunlight reflected from the fluttering objects will frighten birds more effectively than a stationary scarecrow does. And boost winter light for houseplants. Cover a panel of cardboard with foil and position it on a wall so it reflects the light from a window onto your potted plants. It will not only boost their growth, but will keep them evenly shaped. And cones for bulbs. Give forced crocus and hyacinth bulbs the darkness they need by placing them on a chilly windowsill and covering with a cone of foil. Remove the foil when crocus shoots reach 2 inches and when hyacinth shoots reach 4 inches. And a dahlia sampler. Dahlias deliver brilliant color all season long. Plant one of the single types, such as Orange Julius, with blooms that resemble sunbeams or envy, whose 1-inch flowers flame a ruby red. Rigoletto, Rigoletto, flowers all summer in a paint box array of colors, or opt for a dahlia mix. And a holly sampler. Climate is an important consideration when choosing hollies. Chinese holly and Yupan holly thrive in warm areas, while American and Japanese are better for temperate zones. For cold northern, choose inkberry or winterberry types. We've run out of time for today's episode of Out in the Garden. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you enjoyed it. I'm Cindy Fowler. You have been listening to the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. We hope you have enjoyed it. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. So long. Until the next time.